Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to today's celebration. Please open your Catholic Channel hymnals to Sirius XM 129. That's Sirius XM 129.
It's the Catholic Guy Show on the road. This week, Lino broadcasts with our neighbors in the north, Canada, where he'll be making new friends along the way.
Just look at all these fine Canadians.
Now, here's Lino Rulli.
Hello, Catholics, and everyone else, welcome to your home for pure Catholic pleasure. It's the Catholic Guy Show in lovely Toronto, Ontario, as I've been all this week, broadcasting from the headquarters of Salt and Light Television, your Catholic television home in Canada and around the world. Saltandlighttv.org is the website. Father Tom Rosica, the CEO of it, as well as the English language assistant to the Holy See Press Office. But what does that title mean? That's a lot of words. English language assistant to the whole. What does that mean?
It means I get up early in the morning in America and send out documents.
So whatever happened in Rome, you email everybody in the you email a bunch of journalists around the world. Here's what happened in Rome today.
That's I try to explain what the Pope said, what he meant to say, and what he should have said.
What a great way to what the Pope said, what he meant to say, and what he should have said. Is it more difficult working in the Vatican under this Pope than any other Pope? Because he so often loves doing this sort of thing.
It's not.
I'm going to speak right off the cuff right now.
No, I can say it's more fun.
It's way more fun, right?
And there's far too many people interested in what he's saying.
But a good thing, right?
It's incredible.
Your whole life, you're not a young man. You're not an old man.
Thank you.
Well. Yeah, you're in your 50s.
In my mid-50s, yes.
You're in your mid-50s.
I still feel young.
But he's just insane in the best sense of the word. You could never have imagined in your life this much interest in a Pope, right?
Never. You know, the cynics are saying, oh, it's the honeymoon there. I said, no, the honeymoons don't last that long, for God's sake.
That's right.
We're into a deep marriage right now.
It's 2.5 years.
This is big time.
I mean, Vegas odd makers are saying, I'm not going to make it 2.5 years into a marriage.
He's going to outlive all of us. 1 3/4 lungs, and he's going to outlive all of us.
What a life it is to be working for the church. Now, the Vatican, does it pay well or not?
It gives blessings, and we have deep sensations in our hearts, but we have no exchange of cash. After all, with this Pope, he's cleaned up the mess over there.
And so, but you work for the Vatican Press Office. I mean, the Holy See Press Office.
I'm an assistant to Father Lombardi.
Who's the spokesperson.
A saint.
And and how much does he get paid?
I'm not sure he gets paid. He's a good, faithful Jesuit.
And you don't make any money either.
Nothing. Not from the Vatican.
Sure, but that's...
We pay for the privilege of serving. That's the key.
Now, is that a good business model or a horrible business model? Because there are really arguments on both sides of it, right? You could say, like, with teachers. Teachers are just sinfully underpaid, at least in the Catholic schools, if you ask my opinion. But at the same time, if a teacher got paid $300,000 a year, you might get people in there who are not passionate about teaching, but are doing it simply for cash.
So let's put it this way. For the Vatican, people think that this is a huge structure with hundreds of people and bureaucracies like any particular government. But when you're working up close and you say that you see the output of a small group of extremely dedicated and loyal people, it really is inspiring.
Now, John the 23rd had a great joke.
Oh, I know it.
When somebody had asked him something along the lines of, Holy Father, how many people work at the Vatican? And, you know, they were, of course, saying, is it 3,000 people? Is it 4,000 people? And he said, how many people work at the Vatican? Oh, about half. Now, Father Tom Rosica, is that your experience as a guy who...
It took him a long time to get canonized after that.
Yeah, you're right. You know, the paperwork moved real slow through the Vatican to canonize
him. I think some of those bureaucrats there kind of slowed down the process. Like, no, God bless. John the 23rd is one of my favorites.
One of our fatter saints.
He was gifted.
the fullness of the Catholic priesthood.
He represented the Italian culture and the Italian food at its best.
And he had a nose. My boss, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, the Archbishop of New York, is the only one who said, you know, he and I were at St. Peter's together not so long ago, and he looked over
the body.
You can see the body of St. John the 23rd, and he's like, Lino, I think I met somebody, or I saw somebody with a bigger nose than yours. I said, where? He goes, look at John the 23rd.
John the 23rd had a nose for goodness. He can smell it out.
Not me. I've got a nose. I sniff out trouble and go right for it. Is this what you wanted to do with your life? You know, there's nothing I find more fascinating than how God places people in certain places, circumstances. Was young Tom Rosica, your dream was to one day work at the Vatican?
I grew up in Rochester, New York. I will admit that I wanted to be a priest when I was a kid. We had great role models. I mean, one of my bishops, for God's sake, was Fulton Sheen. I remember my father taking me to the rosary with Fulton Sheen. He'd pray the rosary in some downtown church on the radio. It was like going to see the Wizard of Oz.
Now,
it was incredible.
Again, not to date you, but just for those who might not know who Fulton Sheen was. Fulton Sheen was a bishop back in the 1950s who had an extremely popular television
show.
And
he came to Rochester. He was sent to Rochester, he calls it, in his exile from 1966 to 69. Those were the years of my first communion and grade school and everything. And I can remember seeing him and saying, Mamma mia, my God. My father said, bow your head.
No, he was, he won an Emmy Award. He had a national television show on.
He was way ahead of his time.
Real broadcast network television.
But I didn't want to be like Fulton Sheen. You know what I wanted to do? I entered a teaching community, a teaching order called the Basilians. Not the Basilian priests, or millions of priests, but St. Basil. And I wanted to teach high school French and Italian. My specialty was French and Italian. Up until now, I've done nothing that I set out to do. I've only had a very few choices, but you know what? I don't mind it. It's much better that way.
There's something about when people ask about the religious life, and the religious life like a consecrated life, like a Franciscan or a Basilian or a Dominican or something like this. Father Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, and hopefully I'm not. People always talk about, well, celibacy is the biggest give up. That's always the biggest challenge. But in some ways, obedience also has to be, because you're an adult male and somebody else is telling you what to do with your life. I've got a boss. We all have bosses. But is actually telling you, all right, so you always wanted to be a teacher, huh? Now you're going to go do this, or now you're going to go do that. Is that really cool, or is that frustrating?
All right, it's a very good question, because most people, when they come up to you, they'll say, isn't it sad that you're celibate? Isn't it sad that you can't have kids?
By the way, people have been saying the same thing to me for years.
Oh, I know.
Look at my face.
You finally made a choice. But you know what? In this age, against the challenges of our time, against an age that features rugged individualism, complete freedom, do whatever you want, I'm my own person, I often think that the biggest challenge today is going to be in the area of obedience, as you rightly pointed out. Yes, chastity and celibacy are challenges for everybody, even for married people. So be careful, because it's going to be one of your problems too. And after April 22nd,
you know what I do? And I take my ring. So my fiance gave me an engagement ring.
So
right?
Cheap.
it's a man engagement ring, is what it is.
Man engagement.
It's made of tungsten or something like
really?
This. Really? And
it's got a homing device on it, too.
Yeah, she knows exactly where I am at all times. That's actually not a bad thought. I'm curious if she did put a chip in this thing. And I go between my right hand and my left hand. If I go to a bar, I put it on my left hand so that the women know Lino Ruli is taken, as if anybody cared. But I do that. So chastity and celibacy, of course, is for everybody, not just. And by the way, between you and me, some of my married friends say, geez, once I got married, I really know what the celibate life is like. You get a couple kids, the next thing you know, you're living the life of a monk in the bedroom. So some of my married friends know it very well.
But I think nowadays, listening to many people, it's the giving up your own freedom and the belief that somebody else might have the bigger picture for you. That's what obedience is. It's trusting in that. And sometimes that bigger picture might not be the right picture. But most of the time, trusting in the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit does act, and also trusting in our superiors or in our bishops, if we're diocesan people, it's to believe that somebody else sees me fitting into a bigger picture. And I think sometimes that's a big challenge. Working with many young people these past years, you know, many young people are choosing celibacy and chastity, maybe not for the right reasons.
What does that mean?
But they're choosing it. These promises of chastity or celibacy, because I don't want to be committed to anybody at all. Celibacy and chastity are commitments.
Sure.
They are public commitments to God, to the church, and to other people. But I think we have to check the motives for some of this chosen celibacy or chastity today. The other issue that's a challenge is the issue of poverty or simplicity of life. And I must admit that I know many young people who do live that.
Sure, you, you don't make much money. You kind of live over, right. You work for the church.
All of my staff working at Salt and Light, they're under the vow of poverty. They remind me of that.
Right, they're working in Catholic media. I understand the feeling. You got to take a vow of poverty. By the way, I said something that got me in trouble in a few weeks ago, and so I'll repeat it on the air now, because why not upset a new batch of listeners who may not have heard this? Now, Father Tom Rosica, your religious order, you're the Basilians, named after St. Basil. I was talking about St. Francis and how radically, like, he lived his life 800 years or so ago, like how radically poor he was,
really?
Right?
Yeah.
And I said, you know, but a lot of people don't do that, even men and women religious in religious life, you know. I got some friends who are, I'm not going to say what particular religious order.
No, can't.
But they really are, I mean, they really have a life of poverty. They don't own anything themselves. But I've always noticed when they need something, they just come to me or they go to other people and they'll be like, oh, you know, our community needs a new couch. And I go, well, I don't know. You better found how to make a couch, or you better get on Craigslist. And when they're like, well, you know, could you help us out with a couch? Of course, the first thing that strikes me, because I'm a horrible human being, is I go, hey, you know, by the way, that's not so bad to have the poverty thing if somebody's buying you stuff all the time. That in itself isn't all that big of a challenge. Like, Francis wasn't going and getting couches. And my friends, of course, they deserve couches. Don't get me wrong.
The vow of poverty and the promise of simple lifestyle, because diocesan priests don't take the vow of poverty. Yes, it is about material possessions, but it's also about a way of being. Poverty means that I am not possessed and I do not possess anybody. That I live freely, I live lightly, and I ask myself the question constantly, how much do I need to be happy and to be effective in my ministry?
Right. You know, because I've always got the answer, though, because I don't need a lot of money. Money doesn't buy happiness.
That's for damn sure.
Money buys the things that buy happiness. Right. So as long as somebody will get me the things that buy happiness, right, I don't need any of the money in the world.
But, you know, the older I get, you realize you need very little. I'll tell you a real funny story. A couple years ago, I was invited to preach a sister's retreat, and it was at their mother house property somewhere on the east coast of the United States. I won't say where it was. Wonderful group of nuns. And so in the olden days, when we were going someplace, the big concern was, is there hot water? Is there running water? Because it was an important commodity. Nowadays, look, I can care less about hot water. What's the big need right now?
What do you mean? Everybody needs hot water, no?
We ask now, well, the big priority is there Wi-Fi or is there high-speed internet?
Right.
Especially for the work I'm doing with the Holy See and Salt and Light, it's important. So the sister called me from this retreat house and she said, now, Father, we're so excited you're coming. We've been waiting for years for this. Are there any special needs? I said, sister, do you have Wi-Fi? She said, I'll let you know. I'll get back to you. So when I arrived at the airport, they came and picked me up. And she said, the first thing she said, Father, we were a little disappointed. We don't have Wi-Fi. A plumber came and told us it would be very expensive. I said, a plumber? And she said, yes. So when we get to your place where you're staying on our property, there's a special cottage for you, and we'll come and get your laundry every day and do it. I said, my laundry? I'm only here for a week. I'm not going to ask you to do laundry. She said, well, the Wi-Fi is very expensive to install the water and everything else.
Okay.
And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, is it Wi-Fi? Is that like wash and dry? And I said, no, sister, it's the internet. And she said, oh, of course we've got that.
Well,
it was one of the funniest things, though.
But by the way, how bad would you have felt if you would have shown up and they had installed a washer and dryer? They must have thought, this Father Tom Rosica,
how much laundry is he bringing? What kind of vestments are you bringing?
He's along? A maniac. Why do you think he needs to do laundry? He's in there. He's in town for a week and needs us to install a washer and dryer. And, oh, no, we
the
got
wife, I said, now I'm very clear. Sister, do you have a hookup for computer? Oh, yes, we have that. So I said, that's all I need.
Be careful when she says, well, do I have a hookup? What do you mean? What, I got a drug dealer? What kind of hookup are you looking for?
Because some of the nuns are wonderful. Some of the older nuns. Father, we'll do anything you want. I said, do you have Wi-Fi? We'll call the plumber.
Oh, the church in action, as only we can see it. It's the Catholic Guy Show with Father Tom Rosica, the CEO of Salt and Light Catholic Media Foundation, Salt and Light Television. The website is saltandlighttv.org. also the English language assistant to the Holy See Press Office, which basically means there's the Pope, there's the Pope's spokesperson named Father Lombardi, but if you want to hear something in English, you have to hear it from our man here, Father Tom. I'm going to ask you a question that I have asked my friend, my boss, Cardinal Dolan, many times as well.
Great guy.
Do you tire, and I'm not saying it in any flippant way, do you ever, not tire is the wrong word, do you ever not be completely thrilled when you're in the presence of the Pope and he is chatting with you? Because, like, with the Cardinal.
Oh, no, not this Pope.
I mean, but you've, because even with the Cardinal, he and I were having a beer once, and I really just said, you know, him and I, we're both just guys from the Midwest. We're kids who, you know, he became a priest. I do whatever it is I think I do around here. And I said, he was telling me a story about, he goes, I saw the Pope and I needed to pull him aside and ask him a few questions privately. And I said, like, does your heart race? Does it skip a beat? Do you get so excited? I mean, you know that for most of us Catholics, just being in the same city as the Vicar of Christ, when the Pope comes to America, let's say, just being in the same city, maybe a drive-by will be something people will remember for the rest of their lives. It's so exciting. Do you still get as excited every single time you see him?
No.
That's insane to me. And Cardinal Dolan doesn't either.
Probably excited is, he's just a great person to be around. He's loving. He's you want to throw your arms around him. You got to restrain yourself at times. And then he'll come over to you and he'll ask you normal questions. He's asked me a couple of times very normal thing, and I started laughing. I said, you're paying attention to that.
What's he asking you?
He asked me how the press conferences were going and a couple other things. He was genuinely interested in our work for the synod. He's very aware of what's happening, and he's the first one to express gratitude. And that's a big thing. This is a hands-on pope, and I think all of it goes back to the fact that he was a hands-on pastor and leader in Buenos Aires.
You know, a few months ago, he did an interview in a Argentinian daily newspaper.
Oh, I know. I translate in English.
He loved, by the way, can we get the Holy Father to start moving away from print? He understands that, the no offense to my print journalist friends, but that might not be the only source of communication.
We're working on it.
And I understand you work for the Vatican, the organization that still sends telegrams out. Explain that theory to me. The Pope still sends telegrams. Is that right?
I think they're sent by fax.
No, you see it in your statements.
Oh, no, I sent them out the other day. The telegrams flying over this country and whatever.
Yeah, when he flies.
Not sure if they know how to receive the telegrams, the recipients. But anyway, it looks nice.
What's
nice
next?
Messages.
The Pope's going to do smoke signals.
I am hovering over your country, and I can see the beauty of that country, and I can see the terrible places, and I can see your wife shopping, and I can see.
Yeah, suddenly he's not the Pope. He's NSA. he knows everything that's going on. But in this paper, He admitted he has not watched television since
1990. Made a promise. Yeah.
As much as I love the Pope, I actually saw that as a character flaw, as a personality trait.
What do
that
you think I felt running Salt and Light? I said, no, I'm not going to have a chance on his.
Well, that's right.
Schedule.
You run a Catholic television organization.
Yeah. Yeah, I went in the next day. I said, hey guys, we're folding tomorrow. He doesn't care. He doesn't watch us.
Now that was an odd revelation. I mean,
yes and no.
No.
Yes and no, because I think what we have is, it's a little reminder that there are many ways of staying in touch. We think that we are really with it because I've got an iPad, an iPhone, and this, and a computer, and everything else, and I've got news coming into me 24 hours a day. It's a 24-hour news cycle. I don't sleep. I just got that. And I think I'm on top of everything. And yet I realize all of that doesn't mean a darn thing at times. How has that helped me to connect with people? How has it helped me to really be in touch with what's going on? I mean, I wouldn't do that. I don't watch a lot of TV, but there's certain things I watch because I'm running a Catholic television network. But I don't live by television. I know others who are hooked on it. I know others who've got the earphones on all day long. I walk into people every morning in the building where I live. Literally, I get in the elevator. They slam right into me. Nobody's looking at you anymore. They got the little machines.
Thank God. I
remember in the beginning living in the building and saying, six, please. I live in the sixth floor. Nobody responded. I said, maybe it's a house of deaf people. But they all got earphones. Nobody's looking at you anymore. They think it's important, the sense of self-importance. And Francis is simply saying, look, guys, there's other ways of being in touch and to really connect. So it was a shocking statement. I don't watch TV since 1990. Well, I'm not going to make a pledge to Blessed Mary. I'm not going to watch TV. Sometimes I think my penance will be to watch TV to be aware of things.
I understand it. And by the way, I work in radio, so I'm not exactly criticizing the Holy Father's lack of television watching. But for a guy who is so connected to people and understands where people are, it is funny that one of the main sources of the world is through television. One of the main sources of the world is through the internet. And he uses neither of those and still has an ability to connect to people.
What does that tell us? What does that tell us? You know, the other day I was in a taxi. When you get in a taxi in Toronto, or you take Uber, I take Uber too because Uber is cheaper than the taxi. Get in a taxi and the driver is talking a mile a minute, but he's not talking with you. He's got earphones on and he's talking to somebody in India or Bangladesh or someplace else because that's the majority of taxi drivers. And I say, excuse me, I want to go here. Hold on, please.
You know, I said, I'm on the phone.
I'm your customer right now. I'm in the back seat of the car. Turn the thing off. And we become so accustomed to that that we're not listening to the people around us.
What's that?
We're not.
Father Tom, is it wrong to admit what I'm about to admit? Oh, my fiance Jill, she got me these Beats headphones, and they're wireless, you know? They're the coolest things in the world. And I love them. And when I, you know, obviously the Catholic Guy Show is on the road all the time, so I'm always traveling here and there, and I'm here up in Toronto, and then I go to New York, and I go to Boston, and I go to Africa. I put those headphones on every single second from when I'm in the taxi to the airport to walking through the terminal to the Sky Club to the plane. I don't have any interest in anybody saying a word to me, even when I'm not listening to music.
But what does that say, though?
I don't need to get in. I don't want to sit next to some guy who's going to chop my ear off for the next 3 hours on a flight telling me about his pants or something. I don't know what I want to
do. That's true. I mean, sometimes it drives me crazy, too. On a plane, I want to sleep or I want to say my office book or pray my prayers. But it's also another signal that we're given to people. I don't care about you.
It's true.
I'm not interested in you.
Amen.
I'm in the habit of saying buongiorno, good morning, and everything else. They don't even look up because they can't hear you. I'm living in my cocoon. Sometimes I go around our office, and I got great, you saw my staff.
Sure, we're broadcasting right now from Salt and Light TV.
But I go around to some of their booths where they're working, and they have these headphones on, big ones, like airplane pilots. And it's all, I said, hello? They kind of look up. I said, good morning, I haven't seen you for 3 days. Oh. Social communication has suffered terribly with all of this stuff. Yes, it's important. I have to wear earphones sometimes to focus and concentrate. I have to do it too in my studio in the office. But at the same time, we've created these zones which basically say, you're not important. I don't recognize you. And that's the seriousness of this wild age of digital communications, of multimedia. We're also shutting out people. And it's supposed to bring the world together. But in many cases, it's caused deeper divisions among us.
See, I hear that, but I don't experience it.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, see, and for me, the Facebook and the Twitter, I mean, people can always find me at CatholicGuy.com. I love knowing what people in my life are up to without having to talk to them. I love seeing what my friend in this city or that country is doing.
We become voyeurs of one another.
And I don't have to sit in that phone and listen to them. They put up a picture of their ugly kid, and I'm like, there you go. I'll like the picture, and I can move on with my life.
I asked my staff a couple of months ago at our Lenten retreat. I said, when's the last time you wrote a letter to somebody? And there's this empty look. Letter? You mean an email? I said, no, a letter. When's the last time you wrote a letter? And it's a whole new way. And when's the last time you picked up the phone and called somebody? Why text? It took me a long time to get involved in this. I had an old cell phone. And I had no idea that people were sending all these text messages. So Joshua, who was my right arm for all the technical stuff, one day he took my cell phone. I said, Joshua, check what this is. I don't know what all these things are. And he says, you have 64 messages here. I said, I do not. He said, why don't you answer these people? I didn't know I had that capability. So I learned that. And then they told me you have to get on Twitter. Then they said you got to get on Facebook. But the funniest one of all, we supervise television students. I may have told you this before. So the students come from the Ryerson University, the big television school up the street from us.
Here in Toronto.
Yeah. So we have wonderful students come. Many of them have nothing to do with the church. They send them over there. I ended up baptizing a couple of them since they're with us. But one day this girl came down and she came on a skateboard. She zoomed right past my secretary, came right in my office. She said, hi. I said, hello, because I don't usually meet the interns the first day. And she said, you didn't write on my wall last night. And I didn't know anything about Facebook at the time. It was about 4 years ago. I said, excuse me. I said, when I was growing up, honey, that was called vandalism. And my secretary heard it, and he told the whole staff. He said, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So Joshua came in the next day. He says, you're getting on Facebook. He says, you got to learn these things. All of them are simply means. But to have 740 intimate friends or 2,000, and people come and say, now,
I've got 26,000 now. They're all my best friends.
How many followers do you have? I have 30,000 followers. Are you intimate with all of them? Are they really soul friends?
Yes.
And we justify our existence a lot of times. All of those things are means. They're helps. I'm on Twitter. I didn't know the terrible expression. What's your handle? I said, excuse me, what's your handle? But that's the right, I've learned that vocabulary. And Facebook, you know, how many friends? We use it to get the message out. But if that is my only way of communicating and connecting with somebody, and the face-to-face stuff is not there, and sitting down and having a coffee and looking at somebody and feeling the emotion and seeing the tears in somebody's eyes or looking at the smile or feeling the anguish, you can't do that with a computer.
Oh, I know, and thank God. I love it. I know you and I are probably different on that. Father Tom Rosica, now, since you do work at the Vatican in the Holy See press office and the English language part, does anybody over there try to get the Pope involved? He's called himself a dinosaur. He doesn't want to do the Facebook or the Twitter. He doesn't want to get involved with anything.
Well, they're trying to say that he's a Luddite because he doesn't know this. But we do not have now a Flintstone Pope. This is somebody who's even transcended some of that stuff. He's of a certain age, but he's taught us and reminded us real connection is this cultura del encuentro, as he calls it, this culture of encounter. It's dealing with people, being with them.
Thank but God. No, but he doesn't know. Like, I think it'd be the most fun thing to be like, all right, today, Holy Father, I'm going to show you Facebook. Even if you don't want to do it, I want to show you. Because as much as I love the Pope, isn't there a bit of a disconnect, an encounter, if he doesn't really know, well, this is what a billion people on the planet are doing. He should know what a billion people, how it all operates.
But he's not against it. He's encouraged it.
No, I know, but I'm saying,
I think he's got better things to do, though.
But does he?
Lino, oh, my God.
But does he?
The schedule he's got?
There's always time for Facebook.
The schedule is one-on-one with people. He's sitting and being with people. And I've heard about some of those encounters. And also, he's a master of the telephone.
He loves cold calling
people.
Cold
calling
people. So am I totally wrong on this, that you think that the Pope shouldn't? See, because I really do believe him not watching TV it's weird, because I understand the philosophy you're giving behind it. But I'm saying, yep, Holy Father, this is where people are. People watch TV.
He's going with it, but there's other ways to get there.
But you're not hearing me then. What I'm saying, yes, it's not that he's a bad communicator.
Yeah.
I'm saying, but do you understand this is...
At 78 years old, I think he's got some other priorities.
But I'm thinking he shouldn't have them.
Well, you write him a letter.
That's the problem. I got to write him a letter.
You write him a letter. Send it to me and I'll get it over to him. That's
the problem. Father Tom, exactly what you said. Now I got to get pen and paper an actual letter.
We try to compensate with our lack of communication, because all of the electronic stuff, there's a certain void that's there. So we try to compensate for that. And you know how we do it? You know those little emoticons that we put on things?
Yes.
That's simply a way of saying, ha, 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 ha. Or when they put down LOL, I said, give me a break. LOL. Then all these smiling faces, upside down faces, people shaking their hands and everything else. Those are all ways of compensating. The other way of compensating, this is my mother's form of compensation, is when she got on email finally, she was sending me email messages with all capital letters.
Oh, is that annoying?
So I phoned my sister. I said, Maria, there might be something wrong with the keyboard. Maybe the thing is stuck. Unleash it. Unlock it. She said, what do you mean? I said, Mom is writing this. So finally, I got my mother. I said, Mom, what are you doing that for? She said, I want you to see it. And I said, you're not sending me a telegram, for God's sake. I said, take off the capital thing. It's hard to read.
I hate when people do that all caps business. You know what I hate about myself? And again, actually, that list, their name is Legion. The things I hate about myself. I hate when I do smiley face all the time. I do emoticons.
I'm just discovering.
I don't do LOL. I'd never write LOL, but I do emoticons, and I feel like I emasculate myself every single time I do a little smiley face. Is that true? The Pope would be against that, correct? The Holy Father would be, he would say, who am I to judge? But in this particular case, I reserve the right to
send
judge.
A picture.
I reserve the right to judge your masculinity in the choice of your emoticon.
Oh, it's very funny. It's very funny.
It drives me.
But they're all ways. They're all forms. If you study it, it's forms of compensation of the lack of the ability to connect. And so we find all these ways. You know, sometimes somebody writes everything in red. You can almost feel the heat coming out. Or the language. I tell people, I can feel your anger from my screen. I said, use black. There's red. Or you mean all these different colors, rainbow colors. What are you trying to communicate with all that stuff? What do you? I said, write normal things. But people have lost the art of writing and connecting.
I agree. And whereas you see it as a downfall, I see it as a positive. I can't tell you how great it is that I can text people I love, people I barely, my friends, and I can just communicate that way. Texting and WhatsApp and everything. I think it's the greatest. I really,
But you're still young.
I love it. Father Tom, I love it.
But I think after April 22nd next year, all
we'll
of this
see.
Is going
we'll
to
see. We'll
she's,
see. We'll see.
Miss Jill there is going to prohibit. She's going to forbid the emoticons because now the only emoticon you're going to have is for her.
Oh, that's very romantic. The only emoticon I have is for my fiance. We got to take a break. When we return, this is going to be very fun. You know, our friend Father Dave Dwyer of the Busted Halo Show.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody loves Father Dave. He does this thing every year called the Father Dave 30-Day Challenge. And for him, it's usually weight loss. Like, he eats too much, and then 30 days he tries to eat less. And part of the challenge then is other people can say, hey, maybe I'm going to pray a rosary. Maybe I'm going to do some charitable work. Or maybe I'm going to – he doesn't tell anybody what to do. And I like it, but I've never participated in it. And I thought, well, this is the year I'm going to participate in it.
Finalmente.
Finalmente, finally. And, you know, the way that us Catholics have it, it's nice in Lent. But we need, you know, it's been six some months or so since we've experienced Lent. We need something to challenge ourselves. And just like here on the Catholic Guy Show, I always let the audience decide what I do for Lent every year.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to let them decide what should I do for Father Dave's 30-day challenge. Should it be a diet thing? Should it be a charity thing? Should it be a prayerful thing? 888-3-CATHOLIC, 888-322-8465. What do you got? What do you think I should do? We have Father Tom Rosica here, the president of Salt and Light. You can find them at saltandlighttv.org. It's Canada's Catholic television network, but you can watch it, of course, anywhere around the world. He's also the English language assistant at the Holy See press office. That's pretty good, huh? So he'll be able to decipher and decide, now, is this a good suggestion? Is this a bad suggestion? 888-3-CATHOLIC, 888-322-8465. I'll tell you one that Father Dave Dwyer suggested because he wrote it on my Facebook page.
What's that?
Me giving up Purell for 30 days. I'm a germaphobe, and I said, no way on earth. So as always, we can always remove the horrible suggestions, and we'll take the rest. It's the Catholic Guy Show in Toronto. Quick break. Back with my 30-day challenge. Excuse me, Father Dave's 30-day challenge after this.
Apparently, Canada said they would finally take Justin Bieber back, only if we send Lino home. We'll be right back so we can negotiate.